Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey, it's Jackie Cash and welcome to the Dork Forest. Intros are hard. I have a new album. You should be listening to it. I have a new hour. You could be watching it on YouTube, but I appreciate you listening to this, The Dork Forest. You could go to JackieCasia.com or TheDorkForest.com, and you can listen to it there. You can listen to it on wherever you're listening to it right now. You can watch it on YouTube separately, and that is where Altercation is also streaming. The album is available wherever you listen to any kind of album, and it's also on Bandcamp, which has a bunch of other, some very old Dork Forests that are free on that channel. Otherwise, you should know that the Dork Forest is, I don't have a Patreon, so feel free to donate. If you have $100 a year, I would love $100 a year from everybody. You can hand me a sweaty wad of 20s when you come and see me do stand-up, or you can email me or Venmo me. The email would be PayPal, jackie@jackiecation.com, where you can also email me. And Venmo is just at jackiecation, which is like my Instagram and my TikTok and all the things. And there's merch. There's Dork Forest merch. There's Made of Bees merch. And I don't know. There's so much stuff. I can't remember everything. You're doing vital work by listening to the Dork Short Forest, and I'm glad you are. And I hope you want to hear about somebody's dorkdom, because that's what's going to happen right now. Rangers, it's me, Jackie Cation. Very exciting. Here's the scoop, folks. We have a return guest. He was on. We talked about MASH. Now, he's going to talk about something he really knows about. Not that, Brian, you know about MASH because you've watched all of MASH so many times. But what about Miles Davis? Brian Swartz, by the way. Brian Swartz has been on the program. He did a MASH episode. It was great. Brian is spelled with a B-R-I-A-N. Swartz is spelled W-S-W-A-R-T-Z. There's a BrianSwartz.com. He is a trumpet player. He plays with fancy bands, and he plays by himself, and he's got an album. And you go to BrianSwartz.com, and you learn things, right?
Correct. Hello, Jackie. Thanks for having me on.
What's happening
that
in
was,
May?
You should. That was a lot of information. The things that are going on, well, you know, one of the bands that I play with is Oingo Boingo, former members. So it's the current version of Oingo Boingo.
Yeah.
Minus Danny Elfman. Danny does his own thing, but it's a lot of the guys that were originally in the band.
Right.
So in May, we're playing two shows in May, May 8th, at a place called Cornerstone in Berkeley, California.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's Friday, May 8th. And then the next night, we're playing here in Agoura Hills at the Canyon. Where you
that's
saw
That's where
us.
I saw you guys.
Yeah.
That's where we... And it was exciting. It was... I don't know anything about music, as I think you know, because you listen to this program. but the... do you know that your lovely partner and my good friend, Laura House, and I had lunch mm-hmm. yesterday.
I did know about that.
And, or coffee or whatever. And I was telling her that I accidentally saw out of the corner of my eye that TV show, the movie Begonia.
Okay.
Because Andy was watching it on the plane. And there's a guy, I think, Jesse? Whatever his name is. The blonde guy. And I thought he looked like Brad Pitt. And Laura House almost stormed out of the coffee shop. Let's just say that. And she said,
"It doesn't take much to get her to storm out, though." That's
and she, hilariously, for the rest of our time together, would say, "Don't look behind you, Jackie, but Brad Pitt's back there." And
she didn't tell me about that. She told me that, you had a conversation about. The facial recognition and
right, because I don't have it.
There was a drawing of Anthony Bourdain there that you didn't know.
I said,
was
"Is that
Bourdain.
Anthony Bourdain?" And she, "Does that look like Anthony Bourdain?" She said, "It does because it is. It is a drawing of Anthony Bourdain." And
well, I suppose I should feel honored that when you see me, you say, hi, Brian.
You got a slot. I know. There's only like 600 slots in my brain. And for some reason, I can still picture my grandmother, never going to see her again.
Oh.
That should open up. Don't you think that should open up?
We don't really have control of that. Actually, I'm of the belief, although in your case, maybe it's different, that we have a storage facility in our mind that stores everything that our senses has ever taken in. Otherwise, why would you then walk into a room and smell your grandmother's cookies from when you were five and go, oh, that reminds me of my grandmother's. I mean, I think everything you've ever heard.
What about access?
That's the problem. That's the problem that we have. Is okay. Access to that and recall of that information at will. Usually it needs to be triggered by something.
Right. Like a smell or a sound or.
Yeah.
Someone saying, I can't believe you don't remember your grandmother. I don't know. It might be that. But we're not going to talk about my grandmother. We're going to talk about Miles Davis, who I knew nothing about, even though I saw him live once.
Well, but this is why we're doing this, because you have actually seen Miles Davis, and most people these days have not.
Right.
So you're in a rare position, and I think we've talked about it a couple of times, how I'm kind of blown away how you like you don't have a lot of recollection of what he was playing or
you trumpet. Know. This is what I remember. I remember there was I inadvertently said on the other podcast, the Jackie and Laurie show, that I didn't like jazz. And that's not, and did I get some emails from people.
Oh, really?
And
I know Laurie gave it to you.
Well, Laurie will give it to me if I don't say I like, you know, if I don't like popcorn, right? It doesn't matter. I mean, but jazz, and it's not true. There is some jazz that I like. I have a hard time with improvised music that I don't know where it's going. I don't know what's going to happen. I like to sing along, Brian. But I know that there's quality. I know, like, cause I like, here are the two things that are bookend, like around. I like swing. I like big band and I like marching band.
Okay.
These all have the same instruments, right?
Sure, or many in common, yes. But so when you say swing, you're talking about a specific era of music. You're talking probably about the 30s and 40s, maybe the 50s.
What is Jelly Roll Morton?
Well, Jelly Roll Morton is a little earlier than that, actually. So, like, he was...
Is that not...
You know, what he was 20s, commonly right? referred to as, like, ragtime. Yeah, you know.
Okay, maybe I like
jazz,
ragtime.
But he also claimed to have invented jazz. I mean, there's several people that think that, too. I don't want to get into the controversies here.
That's not what this show is about. This show is about the joy of jazz.
Well, I'm just, you know, I'm just trying to learn the damn art form, you know.
It's an art form.
Yeah. It's an American. Okay. It's like a genuinely American art form. You know, it's based in you could say European harmonies and music theory, but, you know, it jazz kind of, you know, they say that it was a big mixture of things that were going on in New Orleans between, you know, the black musicians that were there and the Creole musicians and you know, there's a lot of French culture in New Orleans. So there's a lot of mixing of European and American
and African
music
and American African stuff, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Right. And Latin.
That's as
also.
Much as I know. Oh, and Latin. Okay.
Right. So, so jazz has come to mean a lot of things. Actually, my favorite definition of the word jazz, Wayne Shorter, who famously played with Miles Davis.
Okay.
Do you know who Wayne Shorter is?
I have never heard of Wayne Shorter.
Okay.
What
Shorter just passed away.
Play?
He was a saxophone player who just passed away a couple of years ago. And he was very famous, Grammy winning, you know, played with very famous bands, led very famous bands of his own. And but his definition of jazz, he thinks the word jazz means I dare you.
Oh, okay.
So
right. It feels like they're like in jazz, they're pretty much playing for each other and for themselves. Is that?
It can be that way. I know I've described the experience of playing with my own quartet. You know, I played at a restaurant in downtown LA for many years called Perch. And we were there every Tuesday. And I kind of described that since we're in a restaurant and we kind of have to not play too loud. I kind of described it as if we were in a snow globe. The band was doing their own thing in a snow globe, and people would just kind of shake the snow globe up and look at it for a little while and then walk away. They could sit there and actually kind of, you know, vibe with it if they wanted to, you know, if they wanted to sit right by the band. But in general, they just piped the music throughout the restaurant. And many times people were there, they didn't even know there was a live band because they just heard it on the speakers.
Okay.
So, that's how good we were. That's what I'm saying. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. BrianSchwartz.com, you guys.
Actually, that's the band. That's the band. Now we talk about dates. I also have a date in May 22nd. I'm with my own quintet, which is basically what started at Perch there. I'm playing at the LA County Museum of Art. They have for many years have had a free Friday concert series. Decades. They've had. I know the first time I played it with my own band was 2001. So. So my quintet is going to be there, and I'm going to sing and play, and I wrote all the music and that.
Well, I actually hope I'm here for that. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, it's really cool, and it's, you know, it's out there, you know, where the street lamps are, that array of street lamps that's right along Wilshire Boulevard. The concerts are right there, in the open air, and people, they have some seats for you, but they also, you know, it goes all the way back to the lawn back there.
You stand when you play? This is I digress, but
it depends on what doing. It depends. Something like LACMA at the LA County Museum, I'll probably be standing most of the time. The only thing is when I sing, I'm not comfortable standing there and holding my trumpet. And
as you sing?
Yeah, as I sing, I feel very awkward standing there holding my trumpet. And I never, you know, as a singer, I never know what to do with my hands. You know, like there's actors are always like, what do I do with my hand? Well, don't do anything with your hands. Oh, right. Okay. Well, right, then you put your hands down and then you feel like, oh, I look really stupid with my hands just down. So,
Do with your hands? Holding your trumpet.
Well, that's what I end up doing with your hands. That's what I end up doing is I have a stool that I'll sit on when I'm singing, and I'll just hold my trumpet like right here with me.
It's nice.
It's sort of like a security blanket, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's great. I have something to hide behind. Whereas, as a stand-up comedian, you don't have anything to hide behind.
Well, the mic, you got the mic stand. Yeah. Yep. You can hold on to it it's why when I did my new special, I didn't have the mic stand at all. Mm. And he was like, well, I don't want there to be continuity problems with it. And I was like, oh, well, that's not my problem anyway. Mm. But it was my problem. Cause he was like, let's just put it over there. And you just work with, and I was like, all right. And so I didn't have the mic stand.
Yeah.
So if there's any problem with this special, let's just blame it on the fact that I didn't have a mic stand to lean on.
It's fabulous. Okay. What are you talking about? I've seen it already. It's great.
You've seen it. Altercation, you guys, get out there. Here's my scoop. When did Miles Davis, what do you know about Miles Davis? Do you know anything about like his early childhood or any of that? Where he's from?
He was from St. Louis. Although he was It's I've got the Wikipedia page here open just as reference, but he's generally known as being from St. Louis. I think that's pretty much where he grew up, and that's where he started playing gigs and where he was discovered, and then from there he went to Juilliard in New York. You know,
oh wow, okay,
but he didn't stay at Juilliard. He didn't like it there, and
he didn't want to play classical trumpet.
He didn't, you know, that really wasn't his thing. And he said that I've seen, you know, all kinds of interviews and documentaries about him where he said that, you know, they were teaching him one day, hey, you know, poor, sad black people play the blues, you know, because they're sad and poor and black, you know, and he went, well, my father's a dentist. Ooh. So like, we're not poor and we're not sad. We play the blues. So can you rationalize that?
I'm mostly sad because you'd think that we're all poor and sad. That's the only thing that makes me sad.
Yeah. So, he wasn't really with the program there. While he was there, he started playing with, you know, started playing on 52nd Street, which at that time, you know, in the early 40s, mid 40s, Charlie Parker was there. And Charlie Parker was, have you heard of Charlie Parker?
I have heard of Charlie Parker, but I don't know is he a trumpet player?
Charlie Parker was an alto saxophone player.
Oh, and another saxophone player.
Yeah. And he famously with Dizzy Gillespie, who was a trumpet player, Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker created what's called bebop, and also with Thelonious Monk.
Okay.
So
I will sometimes say Thelonious Monk to people when I greet them.
That's felonious junk right there.
I've been given I'm suffering a felonious. Anyway, yes. So I've been convicted of a felonious. Okay. So bebop is different from jazz in what way?
Well, it's just sort of like one of the types of jazz. So the umbrella of jazz, bebop is one style. So now the thing that you have to understand about Miles Davis is that he more than most musicians evolved through different styles. So like he started out, you know, playing with Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker, and they were playing bebop, and so he was learning to play bebop. Which is like a really fast and intricate style of playing. And it's probably the kind of jazz that you might not want to listen to. It might sound crazy to you because it's so frenetic.
The fact that there's different kinds of jazz, mm-hmm. and I should have assumed that there was, because there's different kinds of rock. There's different kinds of country.
Sure.
There's different kinds of everything. And sure. That there, it might be a specific kind of jazz that isn't for me. And it might be mm-hmm. bebop. All right.
Yeah. Although, you know, there's a lot of different things about bebop that are interesting. You know, like there's a lot of humor in bebop. You know, like Dizzy Gillespie had a song that was called Salt Peanuts. Salt Peanuts, Salt Peanuts. And that was kind of the whole song. I mean, there's a middle section. Just a silly gimmick for them to kind of improvise over and do, you know, do some crazy playing over. And, you know, and to play fast. They love to play fast. See, now that's probably another thing that you might not be able to relate to it about is like how fast they were playing. Because Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie could play like super fast and really intricate stuff really super fast. So
were they... Now, is bebop, is it written down? Is it like, it's obviously, it's not 4-4, right? Like, what's
it could be any, you know, time signatures.
It could be any code.
Yeah, but it could be a fast 4-4, you know? So instead of 1-2-3-4, it's 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4, like that.
Okay.
So, you know.
Ooh, where is scat? Does that fit into jazz?
Well, scat, if you take the safe search off of Google and you look up scat, guess what you'll find first. Okay.
That's poop. It's sometimes poop. Called poop.
But yes. Scat singing, you know, sort of originally, it's turned into like a way that people have decided that they want to sing and be a singer that improvises like a horn. And there's sort of like a stylized way of doing that now, and they teach it in school to jazz singers. But in the early days, the people that scatted were mostly like horn players that were singing. So like Louis Armstrong famously would do that. Right. Like, you know who Louis Armstrong is, you know, early.
I do, but that's because he's been in a lot of Bing Crosby films. So.
Okay. Well, Bing Crosby was very influenced by Louis Armstrong's style of singing, you know.
Yes.
So,
and his,
so that
and
would
his
make
music.
Sense.
Yeah.
I yeah.
believe so.
So
yes.
So, you know, and they say that scat singing sort of started when people forgot the words, but there was, but there's other examples of that where, you know, like there was a really famous trumpet player that was famous before Miles Davis from St. Louis named Clark Terry. And Clark Terry had a, had a routine that he used to do called mumbles, where it just sounded like, what did you hear what she said, you know, or something like that, you know, where he would sort of integrate the non-words with words and did you see what she was doing over there, you know, and so like,
right. And then it was mumbles. Yeah.
Yeah. And he had this mumbles routine. It was very, it was classic, and he had it worked out, you know, really well. And it was really humorous, and it, you know, mixing up the actual, you know, jazz lines that he was improvising with, you know, lyrics, you know. It also became very popular for vocalists to sort of take some liberties with the melodies, like Ella Fitzgerald was really known as a scat singer, you know.
Okay.
But also just a great singer of melodies, you know.
Right.
And also Sarah Vaughan was a great singer. She was one of my favorite singers, Sarah Vaughan. And she knew a lot about music theory. So like, and she knew how to play the piano really well. So as a singer, she could do a lot of things that other singers couldn't do because she understood all of the music theory that went behind all of this. So, so things
did Miles Davis scat? Does he sing?
No, Miles did not sing. Miles, in fact, famously hardly ever talked. He had some kind of an injury to his voice box or something, in the 40s or 50s. And, he was supposed to, you know, really take it easy on his voice. And then something happened and he yelled at somebody and it gave him a permanent, like, scratchy voice, you know, like really soft spoken voice for the rest of his life. So he talked like that.
Oh, my God, that makes me want to clear my throat right now.
Right.
OK.
I mean,
I'm gonna have some water.
You know, he was like in. You remember Honda Scooters in the 80s? Like, he was in a Honda Scooter commercial, you know, because he sounded so and dressed so cool. And, you know, but and he was on an episode of Miami Vice. He played a pimp on Miami Vice.
Wow. OK, yeah. So there was work. There was other work for him.
Yeah, he did.
But he didn't need other work. Right. Because he's like one of the greatest trumpet players. Like he's.
Well, he was a personality also, you know, like he.
OK.
He wasn't, you know, he was like Dizzy Gillespie was a very outgoing, outspoken personality. In fact, was like a U.S. ambassador, you know, music ambassador, traveled the world as an ambassador from the U.S. But Miles didn't necessarily do stuff like that. But like he was known as a really great band leader. So what I think would be fair for me to do for people that don't know much about Miles Davis, I should kind of map out, like, I think I mentioned earlier that Miles Davis changed styles of music, you know, several times, and sometimes famously was the leader in doing that. So like when he started out with Charlie Parker and, you know, and was taking the place of Dizzy Gillespie in Charlie Parker's band, he was playing really fast bebop. And then a couple of years later in the 50s, he started playing, you know, what was called cool jazz. Actually, you know, it was in the late 40s. And so like there was this really much more simplified, you know, cool way of playing that Miles had developed that was the opposite end of the spectrum of bebop, you know, a lot more space, you know, playing a lot of ballads, a lot of slow songs. And he famously developed the sound of the trumpet with what's called a Harmon mute. And, it just had this really cool sound. There were other people that played with a Harmon mute before him, but he really got famous, you know, for playing with that. And that was like a signature sound for him.
And now a Harmon mute is a specific kind of mute. Like there's different kinds of mutes.
Yeah. In fact, I got a bunch of mutes out here cause I was I'm playing a little theater production coming up. So like there's cup mutes. There's
right.
Those are the ones I saw. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Those are the ones that you would see in school a lot.
Yep. Those are the two we saw when I had a short-lived trumpet career in high school. Yes.
I'm sure you did fine.
I did fine. I enjoyed it.
And also plunger mute. I've played a lot of plunger mute in my life, which is actually the ones that I used were actual, toilet plungers, but I never used them as a toilet plunger. I went to the hardware store.
Right, just so people don't know that, don't think that you've got like toilet water on your trumpet.
Right.
Right. Yes. So, but he played a Harmon mute.
Yeah. So he played a Harmon mute and he developed this really cool sound. Did some really famous records. And remember jazz was the popular music of that day. You know, this is before rock and roll came around.
Oh, right, right.
So it was, you know, prior to like Little Richard.
It was the biggest thing.
It was the thing going on. You know, I mean, Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker were very famous, you know. And all of those swing bands, you know, like Glenn Miller. And now that's what you're talking about in the big band era, you know.
Right.
Glenn Miller, Woody Herman, you know, all of those kind of things, those kind of bands were also the popular music, and they had the popular singers, and that's where Frank Sinatra started, is playing with big bands, and you know, right. These
Connie Francis, maybe, I don't know.
Sure,
I just
sure.
Just Connie Francis. Throw out some names, you guys. Yeah. It's a yeah.
So let's see, we're kind of like weaving around here. So like,
right.
So, but my point was that we're, you know, in the 50s, jazz was still very popular music because, you know, rock and roll hadn't really started yet. And then once that, you know, exploded in the 50s, then that kind of became, you know, the big popular, big selling music, and jazz, you know, kind of started to go on a little bit of a decline steadily. To where we are today, where it's a really small percentage of the record sales.
It's niche. It's more niche. But here's the crazy thing. So did he become famous before rock and roll? Like he was like a big name.
Yeah, he was famous. Yeah.
And then for the next 40 years, he played jazz. Like he didn't make that lateral move.
Well,
from bebop to what he did was cool jazz.
Yeah.
And then he didn't go to, rock and roll.
No, he did.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, because like in the, throughout the 60s, he started playing more and more experimental stuff like everybody was doing. And there was a big avant-garde jazz movement in the late 50s and early 60s where they were playing, you know, stuff that just, now there is legitimate avant-garde music that's very difficult to listen to. And it is intentionally not, you know, not played to sound good. sometimes.
Maybe that's the stuff that I had a hard time listening to.
Well, I would challenge you to sit down and listen to a Cecil Taylor album and then go, you know, tell me what that is. Cecil Taylor was a piano player who played very avant-garde music, improvised, and it's very erratic and very hard to follow and for anybody. And it's incredibly complex. But
it's incredibly complex, but do you enjoy it? Like, is it something that you'd be like, because you get it kind of, or?
I don't listen to, well, I'm going to preface the statement with, I don't listen to music casually anyway, but like,
but I'm like, sure it's very hard. Yes.
But I'm aware of Cecil Taylor. I've listened to Cecil Taylor. It's not something that I throw on, you know, when
right.
I feel
cause
like
it's
listening.
It's complicated, as you said. So it would probably make your brain crackle and go,
it's kind of
what is
like,
he doing?
It's kind of looking like looking at a Jackson Pollock painting where you're like, what does this mean? It's a bunch of, you know, splattered paint, you know?
Right.
But
as opposed to a Sydney, like if you were to watch Tootsie and go, oh my God, what is going on behind all this? And, but yeah, no, Jackson Pollock. Yeah. If you know a lot about art to be explained, like mm-hmm. what art. Yeah. I mean, I do think that jazz has a lot in common with trying to appreciate art.
Oh, yeah.
In the way that, because it can be super complicated.
Yeah.
Hey, Rangers, it's me, Jackie Cation, telling you that I don't like to buy meat or protein at a grocery store. I used to buy stuff at Whole Foods, and it was okay. But I don't shop at Whole Foods anymore, and I have this to say. Now I get stuff from Omaha Steaks. I like Omaha Steaks. The quality is good. I used to order it for my dad for special occasions. I'd get him like a row of filet mignons, and he could just you could freeze them individually so he could pull them out and have it when he feels like he's being fancy. So, but I don't like a grocery store protein. I don't like it. And Omaha Steaks, they taste amazing. I understand they also have pork and seafood and chicken. And I'm willing to try that, actually. It's all portioned out. That's kind of exciting. Yeah. I have tried so far the stew meat and the burgers. I am going to take the burgers and smush them all together and remake burgers because I like to add stuff to them, a little more spices and onions and mushrooms. So what I'm saying is that I really like Omaha Steaks and all of their proteins are probably amazing. And I will say to tell you this, the steaks are great. Taste the Omaha Steaks difference and never settle for grocery proteins again. Get flavorful, high-quality proteins delivered by visiting omahasteaks.com, plus $35 off when you use promo code DORK, D-O-R-K, at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, code DORK. Terms apply. See the site for details. Now, let's get back into the show.
One of my friends and also heroes, modern trumpet players who's still alive. He's 77, 78 now. His name is Tom Harrell, H-A-R-R-E-L-L. One time I gave him a compliment. I had gone to listen to his quintet and I said, oh, Tom, you know, the way that you write for your trumpet and saxophone, it's so very conversational like a lot of times, people that write in that context tend to have the horns just kind of doing parallel things and sort of sounding the same or not a lot of variation in how the movement is. And I told him that, and he spent about 20 or 30 minutes comparing those two instruments, the trumpet and the saxophone, to paint, you know, and to painting, like these two notes together sound like orange and green next to each other.
Oh,
or
wow.
These two notes to each other sound like a pale yellow and white next to each other, you know?
Huh. Yeah.
So
really doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. So yes, it's all art is very interrelated and you can draw inspiration from a lot of different, you know, that's why I keep art around. Like this thing behind me is pretty erratic,
right?
Really. But
sure.
that's just one of the things that I have in it. But I actually really like abstract art a lot. So,
okay. This art behind me, Chris Foley, my mother-in-law picked that sunflower. Yeah, that's what that is. Well, and I don't know. There's, I don't think I knew that it was a sunflower until just now. I just walk through life, Brian Swartz, sometimes. Okay.
We all do at some level.
Right, right. There's always,
you can't
there's
be participating every minute of every day.
You can't see everything. And it's only been 4 years with this. So what kind of rock and roll did he do?
Okay, so after all of the experimentation of the 60s where, they were doing what was called free jazz, Miles was exploring that quite a bit, where they were playing very conversationally, you know, like they were, they would, you know, generally jazz is what improvisation is you're playing a song and then you play a solo over the form of that song, you know, so you have to understand how the melody goes along with the chords that go underneath of that. And everybody that's playing that song with you understands that structure and they keep that structure the whole time. And when you're improvising, you're just playing, you're creating an alternate melody. And everybody kind of has different ways that they think of that, you know, just the same way that everybody has different dialects, you know?
Okay. Oh, wow. All right. So in the 70s, he started, because I know there were more horn sections in the pop music of the 70s, in the rock.
Right. So what ended up happening in the 60s after they did all of that experimentation is like, and rock was getting more and more popular and electric instruments were getting really popular. Miles Davis started like, wanting to play with like Jimi Hendrix. So, So
did that happen?
I think it was about to happen when Jimi Hendrix died, but you know, like Miles Davis was married to, what was her name? I'm going to look it up because I'm bad with that. Betty Mabry. Betty Davis.
Wait, Miles Davis was married to Betty Davis?
Not that Betty Davis. There's a different Betty Davis.
Okay.
But not Betty Davis, the actress. Yeah.
Okay.
And anyway, Betty Davis, Betty Mabry knew knew Jimi Hendrix, I think, and was they were all trying to get that connection going. But anyway, what the result of that was, and there were a lot of jazz musicians kind of thinking similarly at this time in the late 60s, what ended up happening is Miles Davis made a recording called Bitches Brew. And it was it's one of the biggest selling jazz records ever because it's so experimental. And it's probably something that it would be hard for you to listen to.
Do you want to put together a Spotify list of 8 great Miles Davis songs?
I will give it a shot. But I would probably start with something that he played with Charlie Parker, and then I'd probably play something from the cool era that you would, you know, something from the, I mean, like actually the biggest selling jazz album of all time is called Kind of Blue, which is a Miles Davis album. And everybody, I don't care who you are, you should hear Kind of Blue. And
I'll write it down.
It's just a great album, and from beginning to end. And actually, another album from that time, from the 50s, 60s, that I really love is called Sketches of Spain, that he did with an arranger named Gil Evans.
Okay.
And I can remember very distinctly, you know, I really took a deep dive into Miles Davis when I was in college, and I remember sitting down, somebody said, oh, you should listen to Sketches of Spain. And I sat and listened to it from beginning to end, and I was just mesmerized by it. So,
okay. Yeah.
So I would actually probably give you 8 albums to listen to, but I know that's asking a lot.
Yeah, don't do that. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's,
but, so Bitches Brew anyway happens. And then Miles Davis, for a period of like the late 60s into the early 70s, is playing a lot of really funk based music, and he's using electronic effects like guitar effects on his trumpet, wah-wah pedals, you know, stuff like that to make the trumpet sound different. So it's, there's some really a lot of experimentation going on.
Yeah.
And that really changed the direction of music into where, into what was called, and throughout the 70s, a lot of bands that were playing what was called fusion jazz popped up.
Okay.
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 Bands like, there was famously a band called Weather Report.
Right.
That came up. Another one called Return to Forever.
Was it called fusion because it was a fusion of jazz and pop?
Yeah.
Or jazz and rock?
Jazz and rock, I guess you would say. Pop is, they weren't necessarily going for pop. They were just looking for a harder edge to jazz. And it ended up, you know, like really being its own style of music. And got very popular in the 70s. I mean, there's some Weather Report concerts that you can see on YouTube from the 70s that are just like, they're just like a rock event. And actually Miles Davis played, you know, with the band that did Bitches Brew. He played at the, there was a famous rock festival on the Isle of Wight. I think it was 1970 or 71. And it was like, there were like 100,000 people there, like a Woodstock kind of a thing. And Isle of Wight is WIGHT, by the way.
Right, I know it because I read about it in a romance novel once.
Aha.
So
it all comes
so you know,
back to that.
I have snippets of information that have for some reason some librarian or English major who then turned to romance novels always wanted to go to the Isle of Wight.
Okay. Well, there was a big famous concert there.
A famous concert in the late 60s or early 70s?
Yeah, and Miles Davis played at this concert with his really experimental electronic band, you know.
It says that jazz fusion is a fusion of jazz, funk, soul, and rock.
Yeah.
Does that sound?
I would also include Latin music into that.
Okay.
Cuz
yeah,
there was
that sounds amazing, honestly.
It is.
I like funk. And I like soul, and
you know,
I like Latin.
And that was some of the earliest music that I remember hearing, you know, when I was a kid, because I had a brother. I still have a brother who is like 10 years older than me. So he was into all of that music in the 70s when I was like 10. And so
right,
I'm hearing
and bought all
this
those
stuff.
Albums.
Yeah, and had all those albums. So I'm seeing these albums at the house, you know, and hearing that music in the 70s. So I was really influenced personally. And then when the 80s came around, everything sort of softened up a little bit, you know, those bands kind of kept going. And jazz really had a little bit of a tough time in the 70s and 80s. And in fact, famously, Miles Davis took a break from playing, in the mid 70s for like 6 or 8 years. Like just
and
stopped.
Was on Miami Vice. Was he ever on the Love Boat?
Nope.
Too cool.
Too cool for that.
But he was on Miami Vice. Okay.
But yeah, much hipper. Back, you know, like the very late 70s, early 80s, he started putting his, you know, getting a band together, and it was more of a fusion based band, but, and they were doing some experimental things, he was really trying to play to a wider audience, I think. And that's probably the band that you saw do you remember when you saw him?
1989, summer, okay. Provincetown, Massachusetts, at the town hall.
That is crazy.
It was because there were like 200 people there and it was folding chairs, but it was the richest group of 200 people you've ever seen in your life. And then me, I worked at a hot dog stand.
And how did you get to be there?
Jenny Bergman's dad was Jenny Bergman's dad's name was Joel Bergman, mm-hmm. and he famously was kind of a dingbat. Anyway, but he was a manager for jazz musicians.
Okay.
And jazz musicians and a short time Barry Manilow.
Okay.
So
usually those don't mix.
Right. But he had tickets, I guess. And
Jenny was Jenny like, come with tickets. Me.
Yes. This is how I've seen almost everything amazing. Okay. Right? Like I saw Martina Navratilova and Chrissy Everett play tennis once.
That's pretty amazing.
It was an exhibition, and my friend Mary Skinner had an extra ticket, and her friend couldn't go. I got to see, well, there was some band. Joe Wilson used to co-host this program, and he took me to see a band that we didn't have to smoke pot. It was like one song for 3 hours. It might've been Sebastian something. I don't know what the name of that band was.
Okay.
But, it was, Jazz Manager. I wonder if he's on the internet. Nope. He's not. Okay. Anyway, but so she had an extra ticket to that and she was like, will you go? And I said, well, obviously I've heard of Miles Davis. What is it? And she said, it will be a concert and we will go. And we went. And so that was the summer of 89.
And you were in the front from my recollection.
We were near the, I think we were by the side. There wasn't it was a town hall. So it was literally like 30 rows of folding chairs.
Yeah.
And there was a woman in the front row because Miles Davis asked if anybody had any floss on them.
Mm.
He said, I don't have any floss. This is going to go a lot better if somebody has any floss. And a woman in the front row opened her purse and handed him some floss.
This was a time when people carried floss on them.
Right. Well, and if you carry a purse and you are an older lady, you might have floss.
Really?
What do we know? Right.
I've never been a purse or a floss carrier, so I don't.
Right. Right. But do you know why he would have needed floss? Would it have been for his embouchure?
Maybe he had something for dinner and it was stuck in his teeth and, it can be uncomfortable to play and distracting, and it might come out of your teeth while you're playing and go into your trumpet, which could be bad.
Right. That would affect
how sound. The trumpet performs. Yeah. So,
right.
Or he's just got good dental hygiene, you know, because his dad was a dentist.
Right. What was he playing in 1989? What do you think I heard?
Unplanned pregnancy? Learn how people are getting abortion pills by mail for a safe abortion at home, no matter what state they live in, at plancypills.org. That's plancypills.org.
I know exactly what he was playing in 1989 because he was making albums with a still famous bass player named Marcus Miller. Marcus Miller was producing the albums for Miles. And he had an album called Tutu, which was named after Bishop Desmond Tutu, and a song.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was sort of the, you know, back when when an album had a concept to it, like nobody right. makes albums really anymore. They make one song and they put it out. So, you know, the whole album would have a concept anyway.
Right. There'd be an arc.
That's the way I try to make albums anyway. Anyway, he was, so he made Tutu came out in 1986. So he might've been playing the music from that. Also, he had an album, 89. I'm looking at, it was called Amandla, which is, I believe a word that represents I'm going to sound really stupid, but it's an African word. So I'll just say that.
It might be Nelson Mandela.
It might be, but
there is also a I think I know what I think it's an image.
But the cool thing about a mandala was, you know, I just remember listening to that album quite a bit, and he had an amazing band. Do you remember that he had a saxophone player with him?
I don't remember that.
Because he would have had a saxophone player with him that I really love, who's still around, named Kenny Garrett. And Miles Davis and Kenny Garrett playing together is, we haven't said any curse words yet on the Dork Forest today, but Miles Davis and Kenny Garrett playing together is fucking magical.
Oh, really? So that whole album has got some magic to it.
There's a lot of magic. I mean, Miles Davis is one of those sort of intangible. You cannot describe what it is about him. You know, like famously, when you study jazz, you know, you are transcribing these solos that these great masters have played. You know, like I said, Clark Terry, Dizzy Gillespie, Clifford Brown is another one that I love. I used to love to transcribe. And the guy I was telling you about earlier, Tom Harrell, I love transcribing Tom Harrell. So I can understand better what they're doing, why they're choosing certain notes and what they're doing with their phrasing.
When you say transcribing, you're literally listening and then annotating on music paper what the notes are so that you can play it or so that you can study it or both.
Everything. Yeah. So that you can absorb it on a higher level. So that you understand how that person, you know, thought about music while they were creating it.
Right, because they're creating it. They're not, when they improvise, they're like, what you said was they're sort of weaving in and around an established melody or something.
Yeah.
Form.
Yes.
And then, but it's not something that is written down. They are creating it in that moment.
Correct.
And then if it is recorded, you can afterwards transcribe it?
Right. That's what a lot of people do, you know.
Okay.
And it does you more good to transcribe it yourself than to actually read somebody else's transcription, you know. So for all you trumpet players out there, don't just buy the transcription book of somebody else. Do it yourself.
Do it by hand. And so
and ear.
It's got to take, I mean, how long?
It's time consuming.
Like, I was going to say, I mean, if it's a 10 minute, I mean, it wouldn't be a 10 minute solo, would it?
They're usually just a few minutes. It's very physically demanding to play the trumpet, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, or to play it, but there are solos that last for a long time, sure. But generally, it's just one of those skills that develops your ear, you know, and the more that you do it, the faster you get at it, at transcribing. And
and
then that, you know, you have to have this direct connection from your thought, from your ear, you know, you have a thought and then it just goes right into your instrument. The more that you understand how somebody else does that.
So you can listen to music and you have played, I mean, and you've played the trumpet for decades. So you can tell a C from a D from an, I mean, this is really some real basic bullshit in my.
Well, what's your
with that question?
What you're kind of asking, I think, is like, do I have perfect pitch? Which is like, can I play a note on the piano and tell you what it? I mean, I know what it is because I just looked at it when I played it. But no. Generally, I have what's called relative pitch. In other words, if I know generally what we're at and what key we're in and you know, what the chord movement is, I can pretty much figure that out. And I have developed like pretty sharp relative pitch, and you know, sharp meaning like attuned.
Right. But you're looking at the whole piece to find a place to start. when you're transcribing? Is that?
Well, you know, generally what's going on is, you know, a band will play the song, play the melody of the song, and then each person, or maybe just one or two of them, will play a solo. So that's the point where you would start transcribing. You would go, okay, I'm going to write down the trumpet. So I'm going to write down what the trumpet player played, because I want to be able to play like that. I don't necessarily want to play exactly what he played, but I want to understand what their thought process was and understand their dialect. And maybe I can pick up some of their dialect, you know?
And so you've done this with Miles Davis's?
Yeah. And it's really hard, because you can sit there and write everything that Miles Davis did and then look at it and then try to play it yourself. And you can't sound like Miles Davis. You cannot.
For some reason, so you've listened to it, you've transcribed it, you know exactly like how long the notes are supposed to go and what the fingering is and what and all of it, and you reproduce it, and then someone plays it and they're like, well, that's not the same.
No, it's pretty obvious. There's just something. That's what I started this off to say, is that there's just something intangible about Miles Davis, you know, like, because from what I can tell is that it's almost, you know, like he could almost treat the trumpet like the human voice, you know, like it was very much like the human voice for him. And it was, and you know, there's certain ways that he would bend or scoop into notes. You can try to reproduce that, and people will go, "Oh, you're trying to sound like Miles Davis," you know. But
sure,
you're not going to do it. And then towards the end of his life, the things that he was playing were really abstract. You know, he was a painter himself, by the way.
Okay.
There's some, you know, he was quite a good painter.
If he chose to do it,
had his own style of painting that was really great. It's hard to. So I can imagine exactly what band you saw and exactly what they were probably playing material from Tutu and Amandla, and and I'm sure it was amazing.
It was amazing. I will tell you that it was because I remember loving it.
Yeah.
And not knowing what. Yeah, this is like, here's a painting of his.
Yeah.
That's kind of.
He's a great really painter. Cool.
Those images are extraordinary. What are a couple of your favorite? You have only 6 minutes left. We haven't even talked about Miles Davis yet.
This is what we have in common, is that I saw Miles Davis also. You know, I saw him twice at the Hollywood Bowl, and the first time I saw him was 1989 at the Hollywood Bowl, and then the second time I saw him at the Hollywood Bowl was his last show ever. He died a month later.
All right.
So,
and was he, how did, like, you know, it's like people talk about seeing Sinatra in his last year and how hard it was to watch him play. Like, how old was Miles Davis in 1991 when he died?
Well, when he died, I think he was 65. So, yeah.
Oh my gosh. So he was a relative, like, you know, maybe not the prime of his life, 45 years old, but 65, you're still at the top of your game.
It was a hard 65 years, though, I think, you know.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Did he have substance issues, or?
He put out an autobiography in the mid 80s. And he tells a lot of these stories that he was, you know, he had a heroin problem. And cocaine issues and stuff like that.
Once heroin is introduced into the plot, it's always a problem. It's absolutely never, hey, I had this really great time with heroin.
Well, it's cut, you know, It's cut a lot of jazz musicians' careers short.
Right. It's incredible. Like, it's such a hard. Yeah.
I think about a week ago, I don't know why I got the urge to look this up, but I just asked the internet, hey, what is the average lifespan of a jazz musician? And it said 57.2 years.
Wow.
So.
All right.
I'm doing TikTok. Pretty good. I passed that.
Yeah.
So, but I don't only play jazz. So maybe that, I don't know, maybe that helps.
That's it. The other music's keeping you alive. But I think it is hard to live that life though, that late night, because jazz, I mean, as depicted in Song and Story, goes well into the night. Like that, that's an early morning. People are still jamming at 3 in the morning, four in the morning.
I can remember seeing a friend of mine, this was sometime in the 90s, I think. The friend saw me walk across the street. We were both going to go hang out at Catalina's, which back then was on Cahuenga. It's a jazz club. There's still a Catalina bar and grill in Hollywood. But anyway, I walked across the street to go to this club, and this guy goes, oh, I didn't recognize you. Your walk changed. And I said, and we talked for a minute. He goes, oh, you've been living the bebop life. And I, and I went, oh, I have. Okay. So and, I was participating, in some.
Right. Once you're participating, it will change your gait.
Yeah.
It turns out. But years later, you're back.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool jazz.
Yeah.
What do you find so appealing about, like, what do you have a favorite song?
You mean in general?
I thought I'd change questions in the middle of a sentence. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Just a favorite, because I mean, you said. To sit through, not sit through, but to enjoy in its entirety, Kind of Blue, Sketches of Spain.
Bitches Brew
and Amandla?
Amandla.
Amandla. Accent on the wrong syllable.
That's all right. Do I have a favorite Miles Davis thing? I actually have to kind of put, I can't really put one song into a thing. I kind of have to, because if I'm going to sit,
albums.
And actually it's really hard for me to listen to some music anymore. It's very overwhelming to me sometimes. Like I said, I don't listen to music casual anymore. Right. Like I went through a lot of listening when I was younger and obsessive listening, and repetitive listening to study music, to study certain music. So sometimes it's actually emotionally overwhelming to listen to music for me.
So me sending you an occasional pop tune that has trumpet in it and going, listen to this trumpet guy. Is that a little maddening?
Well, no, I listen to, but I learned a long time ago there was a friend of mine who told me, whenever I hear something new, I always listen to it twice. I listen to it first, just purely aesthetically. And then I put on the musician's hat and listen analytically to it, because I want to, and that's an important thing to learn as a musician, because we kind of always have this analytical brain. Like, we can't walk through a supermarket and not start, analyzing what music is going on the, on the speakers,
Oh, right.
And,
right.
I had a theory teacher who said that, most people, the water just, or the music just washes over them like water, but
right.
we're more like sponges, music goes into us.
Yeah. It has to be very different.
But the funny thing about you asking me that is, like, you probably have comedians that you like, but would you go, if I said, what do you have a favorite bit that you like of somebody? Could you say what that is? Like that? Cause that would be the equivalent of you asking me about a song. You know, that's my
right.
favorite.
The weird thing is I don't have a lot of conversation besides what my favorite bit I've heard recently is.
I see. Yeah.
So, but I think much like you have with music, it is almost impossible for me to watch fictionalized stand-up comedy.
I see.
You know, even Hacks. I tried to watch Hacks, and I know that it's well done.
Miss
Maisel, I know that it's well done. The polka dot one, I know that it wasn't well done. Punchline, I know that I didn't enjoy that.
Right.
But people keep asking me to watch this stuff. You know, Emo Phillips says, for me, one of my favorite bits of my favorite line is that of Emo Phillips is, you need to watch stand up live because to watch it on television is a lot like incest where you're giving up quality for convenience. And for me, which is a ridiculous joke, but it's an amazing joke. But for me, the best way to consume stand-up comedy is live. The second best way to consume stand-up comedy is an album, auditora.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
The third way is video, a special or a clip. The worst way to consume stand-up comedy is through a dramatic reenactment, unlike Law and Order, because there's been a murder at the comedy club. That's my least favorite. It's in the background. Someone's had to give up some of their material. And it doesn't mean I wouldn't portray that comic. I'm just saying it's not the way to consume stand-up comedy. So, because if you think about it, did you ever watch, what is that? There's a 1920s murder mystery show out of Australia, and I've seen all of it, and I can't remember the name of it, but sometimes they're in a jazz bar, and there's been a murder, and she's got to solve it.
Oh, wow.
So to watch jazz through the lens of a murder mystery TV show.
Yeah.
And then you find out the murderer has sent a dart from the trumpet, the bell of the trumpet.
Okay.
To hit a guy in the neck.
if only I could, you know.
That is some mad poison dart skills.
I've got stories, but we don't have time. But like,
let's go a couple extra. Let's hear the basics.
Oh my God. Well, there was just one time, I won't mention any names, but I was playing with a band one time and there were some people that were too close to the stage and they were right in front of the horns and they were waving their arms right in front of us and trying to conduct the horns while the music was going on. And the trombone player, I don't know if you know, but on the end of the trombone slide, there's a little knob. So that if you rest it on the floor, that it doesn't bend, you know, it doesn't ding the end of the trombone, the round end of the trombone slide. So there's a little knob and he just took that knob and he popped that person that was standing in front of us right in the chest. And they just took like 5 steps back and he went, yep, that's what I was trying to get you to do. So super funny.
All right. The weaponization of brass instruments.
Yeah.
Next with Brian Swartz. It'll be our next episode, Brian. You guys, we've been talking with Brian Swartz. It's BRIANSWARTZ.com. He's got all kinds of gigs coming up in May and ongoing. So go check out his website. And I thank you so much for doing the show again, man. This was great.
Yeah, this really rolled quite, you know, just boom, 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 boom. We were on fire.
Yes. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?